Welcome back here with Truth News Radio Australia. And it's my great pleasure in the second hour of today's show to welcome Damon Crowe back to TNRA. Damon has been on the show a number of times before. Damon's in the telecommunications business. And one of Damon's interests has been the Apollo missions, NASA, and the whole mystique of NASA and what it kind of signifies and what they're kind of doing in terms of the way they kind of manipulate your mind. NASA is certainly involved in an activity which is deeply intertwined with propaganda of the biggest kind, because it's about sending people into space. It's about conquering space. And you've got to understand that this is, in terms of propaganda, one of the most powerful propaganda statements you can conceive of is sending human beings into space and conquering another planet. You know, I use the word conquering in its ridiculous form. I mean, it's a stupid idea that we would conquer another planet, but that is the way the mind of the hegemonic, egotistical empire builders think. And it always has been, going back thousands of years. So without further ado, welcome Damon Crowe back to Truth News.
Hey, Herod, how you doing?
Really good, and really good to have you back on the show, Damon. Just a quick take on you on my introduction there. What do you say to that about this power of NASA, the power of theatre? They certainly are involved in gamesmanship and showmanship. Now, I know that they do involve themselves in very practical work. Of course, the space shuttle was involved in deploying the Hubble Space Telescope and a few satellites and things. But it seems that the real function of NASA is far more than merely a practical kind of, you know, engineering outfit of the US government, isn't it?
Yeah, I think many people refer to NASA as never a straight answer. It's a arm of the U.S. military. It's under the Navy command. It's got irrefutable links to the top echelon of the CIA, and they're extremely integrated into Hollywood. And of course, they've got links to the Nazi Party through Project Paperclip. So this is an extremely odd organization. It's very hard to get unfiltered truth fed through from NASA.
Yeah.
And I believe the objective of NASA is a forward-facing organization to send out propaganda and to control the zeitgeist, the programming of the consciousness of humanity on the planet. And on the back end, obviously, it's tied into the U.S. military and its strategy and agenda. But from the onset, I think that they wanted to control humanity's belief that we could travel to the stars. The term astronaut means that you're a star traveler. That's essentially what that term means. And I don't believe there is any evidence to suggest that we could leave low Earth orbit. In fact, there's been very recent articles, again, on the radiation probes that indicate that there's a force field 7,000 miles up, an impenetrable force field. These are their terms, their terminology, that stops killer radiation from coming in to the Earth. And it's never been seen before. And this is a new found phenomena that's not related to the magnetic field either. They know that the magnetic field drops by 30%. And doesn't impact this. So this is just a tidbit that's came out as of last week. You kind of wonder, well, if you've been to the moon so many times, how did you manage to not see an invisible force field around the globe? It's a little bit like going to the moon, you know, half a dozen times and absolutely not detecting there's water up there. I mean, there's just things that just endlessly do not add up. From what NASA's telling you. And, of course, this information is coming from the probes that they sent up over 2 years ago. So why it would take 2 years to tell us that there's an invisible force field around the globe, who knows?
Yeah, and this is all happening in the context of what appears to be a new space race. And, of course, in the 60s we really had the Soviets and the US in competition with each other. And it looks to me as if that is now China versus the US. I'm seeing continuing reports now from China about how they're planning to send men to the moon. And NASA is increasingly talking about it. The stories seem to just pop up out of nowhere, but obviously they've put a lot of work into these projects. But at the moment, I'm seeing on the news simultaneous coverage of China and the US now talking about missions to the moon, missions to Mars. And of course, we have the very publicized Mars One mission, which has been sort of crowdfunded, it's some kind of startup company that's basically received funding on a purely commercial basis to send completely untrained, just ordinary folk on a one-way trip to Mars. And of course, that's received a lot of coverage. I mean, what's going on here, do you think?
Well, first of all, the Chinese mission to the moon, the Chang'e 3 mission, is a little bit hard to read. First of all, it's an unmanned mission. So again, if it was so easy to travel to the moon, now NASA's essentially got themselves an extremely difficult situation because they have indicated they went to the moon with essentially receiving no radiation at all. In other words, there's no detectable radiation in the mission reports from Apollo in their urine or feces, and their dosimeters that were woven into their jackets recorded the same level of radiation that you'd get in the same craft at low Earth orbit for essentially the same amount of time. So there's no accounting for the radiation on this trip. Yet if it was so easy, i.e. there's no more radiation in space than there is at low Earth orbit, which seems to be completely at odds with the recent findings from the radiation probes, but leave that aside to 1 minute. The Chinese have landed a rover on the moon. It's unmanned. So clearly there's an issue about getting humanity into orbit. And the Chinese mission seems to be carrying on the same type of Apollo, NASA propaganda, command center, everybody high-fiving each other, monitors in front of each other, mission control, all this sort of waffle. And it looks like a complete Chinese reenactment of Apollo.
And the design of the spacecraft as well is incredibly similar to the Apollo, the lunar lander, even down to like small details. Isn't it incredible maybe people would say, well, that's the best design, but it's a very clunky-looking design too, isn't it?
Yeah, well, if you take what many people believe is that the inevitable overthrow of the US as the global power and China taking that mantle, if you look at people like Marie Strong and the fact that the banking fraternity and fruitcake's already in China, then if you under the theory that, well, maybe China's being led and controlled by the same people who led and controlled the US, then maybe it's logical that they have a NASA-style type program that basically mirrors the whole NASA type view of space travel, and also the secrecy that entails. That very, very difficult to get concise information from China on these missions. Extremely difficult. In fact, JARA has done a extraordinary job of just analyzing these missions and looking at just the differences between the Apollo missions and this missions. The samples of the soil sediment and the rocks from JARA White indicates that under spectral analysis, they're completely different from NASA. So someone's lying there, because the clear spectrum analysis of water and oxidization and so forth, the presence of water, are completely different in the Chinese samples versus the NASA ones. And of course, the color shots from the surface, albeit, you know, some 50 years later, are quite different as well. They show a different. They don't have the grayness that the lunar Apollo shots had. They come up with a sort of a yellowy sandy look. It's not there's quite a bit of disparity there. And of course, the Chang'e one also is not disclosing any radiation figures, and they're also not indicating when they're going to send a man, a human trip to the moon either. So it seems as though we're having, nearly 60 years on, we're having huge difficulties getting humans out of low Earth orbit, basically.
And Jared White, of course, is the creator of the Moonfaker series and a huge number of YouTube videos that he's put up there. Now, they haven't taken any photos of stars either. It's interesting, isn't it? And this has been one of the big bones of contention between Apollo hoaxes and the debunker community, because none of these space missions have ever taken any photos of stars. And it's kind of puzzling in a way, because it's a great opportunity to do that. You'd think, why not? You know, why not get some snapshots of the stars? I mean, they took so many other photos while they were on the surface of the moon. Now, people say, oh, well, they couldn't do it because the iris of the camera was contracted, because they were, you know, the surface of the moon was heavily illuminated, so you don't see the stars. But that kind of avoids the very, very simple question of why didn't they just point the camera directly towards the sky? And, you know, according to my understanding of the physics of light in a vacuum, if you were to point the camera directly towards the sky away from the sun, so the sun isn't in the viewfinder, there should be no glare. Glare is what glare and diffraction is what occurs in Earth's atmosphere, which is what makes the sky blue, which prevents you from seeing stars. But in the airlessness of space, if you were to point your camera directly into a black area of space, you should immediately see those stars visually, and you should also see them with a camera. And the camera won't necessarily have a problem with its iris, because the camera's iris could be adjusted for that specific lighting condition. You probably have to use a tripod or something. You probably have to hold it very still. But, you know, I mean, why not just put a camera on the spaceship itself and have it pointed up towards the sky? I mean, you know, it just seems like an obvious thing to do, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think the whole unable to see stars from space, because don't forget it took, you know, 2 or 3 days to get to the moon in the blackness of space. And don't forget Michael Collins then spent, you know, a day or so floating around the moon with nothing else to do but to sort of stare out into space. How they could not see stars. Yeah. They couldn't see stars, and they couldn't take photographs of stars. So we flew man all the way to the moon, right? It's the first star traveler. And the only thing we forgot to do when we went to the moon is A, detect that there was any water, and B, to detect if there was any stars. Seems to be a kind of a, you know, fairly a mission there.
There's just something intuitively wrong with it. And, you know, the more you think about it, the more it's striking it is. I mean, the first thing you'd do would be, you know, you're in this capsule for several days, you know, and you're just floating through the darkness of space. Wouldn't you just sit by the porthole and take some shots? You know, like, what else are you going to do? Like, I mean, that's what anyone does when they go on a plane or go on a trip in a bus or whatever. You take some photos out the window, don't you? I mean, it just very obvious. Men and women of Earth, may I have your attention? This is Herewood Fenton, host of Truth News Radio Australia. You're invited to join the info war as we work to restore truth in media and challenge the dark forces which now dominate mainstream news. I'm calling on you, valued listener, to use your hard-earned dollars to help us smash the globalist empire. Visit truthnews.com.au and subscribe today. With Truth News Radio Australia, and my guest today is Damon Crowe, and we're back on the subject of NASA, space, the moon, Mars, and the whole mystery of the showmanship of NASA and all the mysterious unanswered questions, all the puzzling things. And I just find that the whole history of NASA and the moon missions has all these puzzling questions. Like we're just talking about, why didn't they take some snapshots out the porthole of the spaceship? And all we ever get back from the debunkers is these straw man arguments, you know. Oh, you can't take photographs on the moon because the sun's too bright and it's reflecting off the surface of the moon. Complete straw man argument, right? And so the simple question never gets answered.
Yeah, you can walk man on the radioactive surface of the moon with no protection from any radiation because it's got no atmosphere, no radiation belts to protect them from the incoming cosmic or solar radiation. You can walk around in basically a very thin suit for, you know, 20 hours or something around on the surface of the moon against plus 200 degrees, minus 100 degrees, minus 200 degrees Celsius, plus 100 degrees Celsius, some phenomenal temperature range with nothing more than batteries. You overcome all these incredible technical obstacles, but you can't take a photo of the stars.
Actually, yeah, I've got a question for you.
Odd, boys.
I've got a question for you on that one specific point about the temperature, because what I want to know is when the astronauts who are up on the International Space Station or on the space shuttle went out into a spacewalk in sunshine, right, as they often did, how was that done? What was the temperature? You know, clearly they were able to do it, but what's the differences? I know there are many differences. One being on the moon, you've got all this light reflecting off the surface of the moon. The other being that when you're in the International Space Station or on the space shuttle, you're in a very low orbit, which means you're still shielded from the much more harmful, dangerous particles and more harmful radiation of the sun. But they were in full sunlight. But an astronaut in full sunlight just hanging off the International Space Station, how much heat is that? Is that person going to pick up from the rays of the sun striking his spacesuit?
I'm not totally sure. All I know is that at low Earth orbit, you can see stars. There's many, many photos taken from low Earth orbit towards stars in glaring daylight, right? So there are photos of stars at low Earth orbit with the sunlight day of the planet lit up, and they can see stars very, very clearly for miles, extremely very clear, and lots of photos with daylight, Earth in the background and stars everywhere. So, you know, no problems with that. Yeah. I know when they have a spacesuit on, they can only go out for a relatively short period of time, and they receive something like 1,000 times the radiation of Earth. So I know the radiation at low Earth orbit is dramatically more than in a spacesuit, is dramatically more than on surface of the Earth, and that was not parallel in the moon. They went up to the moon and walked around essentially in a spacesuit, which has about 1/4000th of the shielding, 0.25 grams per centimeter squared, compared to 1,000 grams per centimeter squared of the Earth. So the Earth's under about equivalent of 10 meters of water, and you'll now reduce that to the size, thinness of a spacesuit, way thinner than the spacesuit that they use in low Earth orbit, by the way. It's about 0.5 gram per centimeter squared. It's about 0.25 in the Apollo missions, and they got no more radiation. Now, that's a mathematical impossibility. That's just ridiculous. You must have, if you had 1/4000th of the shielding, you should have got something similar to low Earth orbit, which is 1,000, 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 times the radiation of Earth. But they came back after an 8-day mission with only 15 times the radiation of Earth's surface. That is so innocuous that basically indicates that anybody could go into space, because there's basically no radiation at all, no large amount of radiation to even bother about. And of course, we all know that to be completely preposterous. And the interesting thing now is the NASA data that is being dribble fed to society, which indicates this force field, which is 7,000 miles up, indicates the radiation belt is extremely dangerous. And this new Orion mission, which went up last week from NASA, which cost billions of dollars to produce, by the way, that's been 40 years since NASA, in their own admission, has taken humans into space.
Yeah,
I'll tell you what. $10.7 billion.
I'll tell you what, Damon, I want to play the NASA promotional clip here for our listeners about the Orion mission, and you feel free to stop me if you want to make a comment. I'm just going to play it now. Just waiting for that to start up. Here we go.
Orion is getting ready to launch. My name is Kelly Smith, and I work on navigation and guidance for Orion. Orion is NASA's next-generation spacecraft. Built with versatility in mind, it can take astronauts deeper into space than we've ever gone before, to an asteroid, or even onto Mars. For these missions, Orion has to be one tough spacecraft, withstanding high speeds, searing temperatures, and extreme radiation. Before we can send astronauts into space on Orion, we have to test all of its systems. And there's only one way to know if we got it right. Fly it in space. For Orion's first flight, no astronauts will be aboard. The spacecraft is loaded with sensors to record and measure all aspects of the flight in every detail. It all begins with launch aboard a Delta IV Heavy rocket. As it punches into Earth orbit, Orion will jettison its launch abort system. The abort system is a safety feature designed to pull Orion and its crew out of danger if there were a problem with the rocket during ascent. Orion's journey is just beginning. As the spacecraft and the upper stage begin their first lap around Earth, Mission Control in Houston is monitoring the progress of the flight. Orion's over 100 miles up and going about 17,000 miles per hour. Just as it passes over the Indian Ocean, we lose communication. This is expected. The communications link we have through satellites to Orion is momentarily lost. But Orion continues to receive and process data. Its computers can handle 480 million instructions per second. Imagine you are traveling with Orion as the flight test continues. One orbit completed. Time to go. The upper stage of the rocket fires again. Like the setup for a roller coaster ride, this is the big climb we've been waiting for. We are headed 3,600 miles above Earth. 15 times higher from the planet than the International Space Station. As we get further away from Earth, we'll pass through the Van Allen belts, an area of dangerous radiation. Radiation like this could harm the guidance systems, onboard computers, or other electronics on Orion. Naturally, we have to pass through this danger zone twice, once up and once back. But Orion has protection. Shielding will be put to the test as the vehicle cuts through the waves of radiation. Sensors aboard will record radiation levels for scientists to study. We must solve these challenges before we send people through this region of space. For this flight, it's time to head home. The upper stage of the rocket triggers separation. Orion's jets fire to turn it into the proper position to re-enter Earth's atmosphere. No matter what happens now, we're coming in. 75 miles above Earth, the spacecraft enters the atmosphere. Things happen quickly. We're now traveling more than 20,000 miles per hour. Air particles.
Okay, just pause it there. We're going to break. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. We'll be right back. Don't go away. Welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. And talking to Damon Crowe about NASA and the new program, the Orion mission, planned missions to the Moon and Mars. And I won't play any more of that clip there, but just wanted to give you a taste of it. It's very beautifully produced marketing piece there from NASA, would you not say, Damon?
Oh, yeah. I mean, they fail to... It's the stuff that they omit that is more telling than what they're telling you. For instance, we travelled through the radiation belts. No, you didn't. From your own admission last week when you revealed the secret... the invisible force field that was just recently been discovered, which didn't appear in any mainstream newspapers in Australia or America or around the world that I knew of. It was written by MIT and a number of established universities. That's at 7,000 miles up. The Orion rocket went up 5,000 kilometres. So it didn't go through the radiation belts. The radiation belts formally extend 60,000 kilometres, but of course they can extend up to 80,000 kilometres in distance. So they didn't even go anywhere near that. They didn't even go through where this invisible force field, which they say, by their own admission, blocks the more damaging radiation that comes from the sun, from the upper radiation belts, and from the cosmic radiation coming in. So they have not even travelled through the radiation belts, and it was unmanned. And they also said on this mission that the heat shield had never been tested before. You know, bringing something down from, you know, they brought in a astronauts, three human beings in a capsule coming in from the moon at 35,000 kilometres an hour from outer space, yet they're testing heat shields because they've never done it before, so they're indicating. They've never had anything like these heat shields. And also the parachute system is the first extensive parachuting system, and they went into elaborate detail about how the parachutes have got to work to bring the capsule back to into water, the ocean, safely. Now, you think if we did this 50 years ago, why don't you just dust off the designs you had 50 years ago? Why is it such a technological feat to do this again now? And because the fact would have to be, the theory would have to be, because they never did it in the first place. They've never been through the radiation belts, and they've never brought a capsule with human beings back from high altitude space. It's never been done. And they, in this article, by the way, where they talk about this, it says, since the end of the Apollo moon program in 1972, astronauts have flown only a few hundred miles above Earth. Now, this is the Orion press release.
Yeah.
Right? That's in the press release. They openly tell you that they haven't gone above low Earth orbit for basically 45 years. But if you include the fact that they were going around the moon in whatever it was, 62, 63, you're talking 50-odd years ago.
And, you know, this is just another one of those really puzzling questions about the whole NASA program, which just keeps coming back to niggle at you. And I think it anyone who thinks about this, no matter how much of a believer you are, I mean, look, I really would love to believe that NASA really did what they said they did. I don't want to be a skeptic, and I always say that on this show whenever I talk about this. It's not in my interests to believe that anything was faked, but I just have these continuous niggling questions that I can't seem to find proper answers for. And you've highlighted another one of them there, Damon. The fact that, according to their own narrative, it was basically routine. It became routine to send people to the moon. I mean, they did five flawless missions. They didn't lose a single man. They didn't have a single major problem except Apollo 13, but they didn't lose a single man on Apollo 13 either. It was an incredibly successful program, unbelievably successful. I mean, 100%. Like, they didn't lose a man, you know, out of the six missions, five of them were a complete success. And so the technology was proven, field tested, and had become routine. And then it was mothballed for 40 years. And now they don't really know how to do it. Yeah. There's something wrong with that story.
Yeah, no, it's preposterous. If you have a look and you join the dots, they spent hundreds of millions of dollars putting probes around the radiation belts, okay? But they haven't released the full details of that to the public. They've been back for a couple of years now. They sent probes up to the moon to do detailed reconnaissance and radiation measurements up there. Now, NASA know the number one obstacle to human flight travel, amongst a lot of issues, but the number one issue is radiation. That up and beyond everything is the enormous amount of radiation you get going through the belts.
Yeah.
And, of course, the unbelievable amount of radiation you can get by cosmic radiation when you're out at in space. And, of course, if you're hit by any sort of small or medium-sized flare, you're in a lot of trouble, and there's no dispute, there is no shielding against a corona mass ejection, right? If the if the sun launches out a corona mass ejection of radioactive plasma, which weighs many more times the weight of Earth, so get that through your head.
Wow.
We're talking about radioactive plasma that's traveling at close to the speed of light, coming at you, that weighs more than the weight of the Earth. Yet it would just kill you, right? Deader than a hammer, and regardless of how much shielding you're under.
You just have to hope it doesn't happen, and it's sort of unpredictable. You never really know when it's going to happen.
They can't forecast it, right? They're openly admitting they have no idea how the radiation belts work. They didn't even know that there was this impenetrable barrier some 7,000 miles up, 11,000 kilometres up, and they've openly indicated to the public, although not widely publicised, that this invisible force field, which they call was like Star Trek, a Star Trek-type force field around the entire planet, is not related to electromagnetics. In other words, if the electromagnetic force field reduces around the planet, which it has done on many occasions, this force field does not reduce its intensity, and it blocks out extremely damaging radiation that's traveling at the speed of light from the cosmos and from our own sun. The sun is spewing out, obviously, radiation all the time. Its intensity obviously varies. So the solar wind's obviously very, very radioactive, but not as radioactive. Depending who you talk to, you can shield against that. I'm not totally sure about that because I see no evidence that they've put a cat or a dog or a mouse into space. So I don't know what would be like for humans to be in space. I don't think there's enough evidence to suggest we can get through the belts. And there's certainly no evidence that no other organisation other than NASA has been able to get higher than 500 kilometres off the deck.
Yeah, nobody's keen to put a mammal or any kind of animal up there, and you think that would be a cheap
option?
There are
no recorded.
Yeah.
The month prior to the Apollo 11 mission on in July 1969, a monkey called Bion was set up, an elaborate mission. This was hundreds of millions of dollars to send this monkey with all sorts of elaborate technology around it. That's a month before they went. It died. It died after 8 hours.
Really?
That's a month before they took off.
I didn't know that. How high up did it go?
Yeah.
Do you know how...
I can tell you, actually. Just hang on a second.
Obviously beyond low orbit, right? So it wasn't just a...
Just quickly get this for you. It's an interesting... sorry, not Bion. That was the Russian. The Russians set up a program called Bion, which was only a couple of years ago, and that came back. The Russian Bion 1 dead animals was the when they sent up in April 2013, they set up a bunch of animals sealed container.
Yes, I had forgotten. The gerbils. I think they were gerbils.
They had 45 mice on board and gerbils, and Mongolian gerbils and all sorts of things. Yeah. And anyway, they all died other than the reptiles, which can take much higher levels of radiation. No, the monkey that went up the month before Apollo 11 was called Bonnie, as in Bonnie and Clyde.
Yes.
So 1 month prior to Apollo 11, Bonnie was taken into low Earth orbit, 374 kilometres, so it was well below the VAR belts, didn't get into the belts. And neither did the Russian Bion experiment from 2 years ago. That didn't get into the belts. Just on approach to the belts, the animals died. So it was meant to go up for 8.5 days into orbit. The mission was terminated because the monkey suffered so much radiation, it died within 8 hours of essentially a heart attack, which is what the dog Laker did in you know, was it 58 or something with the Russians? They sent a dog up in space, and it died of heat exhaustion. So there's all these so-called legitimate reasons why they died, and none of
we're just going to break. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. We'll be right back. Don't go. Thank you with Truth News Radio Australia, and I'm talking to Damien Crowe about NASA, space, the moon, Mars, and what's really going on up there. Damien, I'd like to briefly talk about your take on the Mars One mission. This is the group of volunteers who have said that they want to go to Mars. There's been a lot of talk. There's a website. There's a big, you know, promotional company behind it. A lot of what we're seeing with space exploration now is it's all about marketing. It's all about advertising. It's all about the presentation. And Russia Today, RT.com, has a little documentary on their website where they've interviewed all of these, or a number of these Mars One volunteers. And it's all very kind of warm and fuzzy, talking about their feelings, you know, how's it going to feel to go to another planet? My take on this, right, is that we have entered a phase of civilization where truth is nothing more than just something like a story you tell that makes you feel certain things is equivalent to reality. And Hollywood has done so much to make that the case. You know, Hollywood, which spends billions of dollars every year on creating completely fake scenarios that you immerse yourself in, that you project your emotions into as if it's real when we know it's all fake. But this is all entwined with Hollywood, isn't it, Damien?
Yeah, I mean, their view is as long as you believe we went to the moon or you believe that we can go to Mars, then it's essentially a true, you know, it's a George Costanza truism with it's no longer a lie if you believe it, you know. So if you believe that you could go to Mars, then, gee, it must be possible because, you know, you can believe in it. I mean, it's total fantasy, right? The funny thing is one part of NASA is rebuking everything that the front office is saying. So the front office is going, oh, yeah, we're going to have all these Google, prize for the first person who can get to the moon and take some photos of the Apollo, waffle, waffle, and we're going to run a reality show to Mars. Well, that's great, guys. How are you going to get through the radiation belts? We haven't got an experiment in 60 years that validates a mammal can get, not so much as a cat or a rat can get through there. So I'm not too sure how you're going to get to Mars when the radiation through the belt's going to kill you. And the 6 months it takes plus that it takes to get there, you're going to die of radiation on the way.
Yeah.
Good
so,
luck.
I mean, before you send a hairdresser to Mars, you might want to send a lab rat first.
Yeah. You might want to send the first mouse to go around the moon. And you'll go, well, surely, haven't we sent monkeys around there? No, we haven't. No one's been up higher than 500 kilometers. What about the space shuttle? The space shuttle didn't get into space. It only got up, 300 kilometers. And, oh, well, the space starts at 100 kilometers. That's like staying, I'm overseas while I'm standing on the beach at Bondi with my ankles in water.
Yes.
I'm not overseas. I'm standing on a beach. Space would be outside the radiation belts, would it not? I mean, I don't care what the clinical definition is. My definition is space is when you are absorbing the full extremities of what the cosmos and our sun has to offer. And you're not doing that in the comfort of low Earth orbit, in my opinion.
No, and, there are so many perils. Indeed, coming back is extremely perilous because of that incredible heat generated, as we saw in the video there, 2,000 degrees Celsius heat. I mean, it's hotter than molten lava. I mean, it's very difficult to come back And they've acknowledged that by saying, well, these people they want to send to Mars.
It's the first time we've used that shield. The first heat shield in history.
Exactly.
The first time we've ever used those parachutes in history.
What do you think they're going
to
do?
They're spending an enormous amount of technology just to find out how the capsule comes back from space.
Yeah. Of course, that capsule is traveling extremely fast when it comes back from the moon, isn't it? Because of the because of the velocity that's generated by that slingshot back around the moon coming back.
Exactly,
it's a lot faster than an orbit that you'd have from a rocket that just went up and went into orbit. Is that correct? Or am I on the right track there?
Well, they have just dropped this capsule down from, 5,000 kilometres. So you'd have to assume you're not even a third of, you're not even, one-fifth of the way through the radiation belt, right? You're basically in low Earth orbit, right?
Yeah.
A little, admittedly higher than the low Earth orbit that the space shuttle was in, or the International Space Station for that matter, but low Earth orbit nonetheless. And they've had to spend $10 billion to get the technology to do that.
They've got an enormous number of sensors on that spacecraft. So what do you think is going to happen to this Mars One mission? I mean, are these people going to just be stuck in the desert somewhere and pretend?
It'll all fizzle out. There'll be a reason why it doesn't go. There'll be a reason why it doesn't go. It'll never take off. The first humans they're planning to send in, 2021 and 2025, and it's not happening. It's not going to happen. There'll be all sorts of reasons. Don't forget, they were planning to go to Mars in the 80s.
Yes.
Okay. That was officially released. They were going to Mars in the 80s. That was propaganda in the 70s.
It's going to be very interesting in another 10 years if we're still having this conversation, isn't it? If we're still completely in the dark, it's completely indeterminate, and if they stop talking about this. Of course, there are so many unknowns at the moment about what's going to happen with the global geopolitical situation, the economy. Yeah. There are so many looming cliff edges that we're sort of about to drop over. It's very hard to just – I mean, it seems that we've entered an incredibly volatile point in history where it's just up, down, up, down, up, down, up, down. It's like the currencies. It's like the gold price, the oil price. Everything has just gone into this extreme volatility situation. And with that, we're getting extreme propaganda statements of all kinds, including now missions to Mars. I mean, on a bigger picture, what do you think is really going on? I mean, maybe we should just finish off the show talking a little bit about what's really going on this planet right now.
They want you to believe that we can travel into space and that we are going to destroy the Earth and that we're all going to be marooned onto Mars and we're going to leave this planet because we all destroyed it. And if you go to, movies, look at the big dollars that have been spent on Hollywood and the programming of the subconscious. They want you to believe since Space Odyssey 2001 came out in the 60s, same time as Apollo, that we could travel to the stars. Star Wars was the next largest big budget movie in the 70s, again projecting you can go to the stars, then Alien and then E.T. and all those movies. You've got Interstellar coming out now and all the plethora of movies of the last 10 years, all apocalyptic, all saying that we can travel to the stars. And yet they are absolutely obsessed with programming the human subconscious that you can travel to the stars. You cannot. You forget if you get overcome the radiation. We can't handle the lack of gravity. You cannot survive for long periods of time in low gravity. The body's immune system collapses.
Well, of course, it's one
you
of the memes.
Can't see life.
It's one of the memes that Hollywood loves. But Hollywood has a number of them in the sci-fi genre, which I just see the space travel one as just being one of a number of them. Another one that's incredibly popular with Hollywood these days is the idea that you will merge your consciousness into a computer, or that you could basically upload your brain, right? Which has got a whole lot of philosophical ideas behind it. Again, this is a myth that Hollywood has created. There is absolutely no evidence that you can do that. But people have seen it on Hollywood so many times now that, I mean, there was a one with Johnny Depp recently, and there was that one with that recent one, Lucy. And they're the most childish plots. They're the most ludicrous, implausible themes. But when you watch this, when this is your entertainment that you watch again and again and again, I think it becomes, you just absorb it, and in the end you think it must be real, it must be possible. And so it's very easy to convince people. It's very easy to fake things when people are given this Hollywood fake junk reality all the time. So
yeah, they can basically tell you anything, and the humans are so stupid they'd believe it. That's kind of where we're at the moment. They'll feed us anything, and we'll pretty well soak it up.
Do you think that the Chinese are real in the sense of their bid to become a superpower of the like of the United States? Because
I think China is subordinate to the same invisible power structure that the US are. I mean, I think if you really look at this, you're talking about getting into fairly esoteric subjects, because you're talking about controlling an agenda for an extremely long period of time. And if you look at the people that, Woodrow Wilson and the key prominent leaders of the US, they talk about a sinister power so present and so powerful, dare not speak its name, because of the ramifications of if you were heard. And I think Russia and China are both subordinate to the same control, which is the elite telling us that you can travel to the stars. It's very important that they get off this planet for some reason. I don't know why, but they're obsessed about getting off the planet, and they want to use us to make that happen, and they want us to believe that it can happen. It's very important that we believe that we can travel into space for some reason.
It's very important that we believe that there's a vaccine that will fix any illness. It's very important that we believe a whole lot of things, that we can change the climate by putting a tax on carbon. There are so many things like that we just believe that are lacking in evidence. Damon, thanks a lot, mate. It's really good talking to you today.
No problems.
And that's a show for this week. I hope you found it interesting. We'll be back next week. See you then. Over and out from Truth News Radio.